Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It
Woohoo!
is, oh, it's April Fool's Day, so we're not really here. It's Monday, April 1st, and this is our Final Four special. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We've got John Tytel and David Griggs up top here, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org below me, Joby Fortson and John Sleeka to his sides. Rocco and John, fresh off of a trip to Los Angeles for the West Regional. Both of you were there, correct? Maybe why don't we start right there? Tytel, let me start with you. You little thoughts about what you saw out there in the West before I actually get to games, just the general experience.
Always great to meet a fellow Hoops HDer. So glad that Rocco could make some time to hang out. He was as knowledgeable and kind in person as he is on the podcast, which was great. And it was neat seeing all the
So you're
Carolina.
glad you didn't meet David Griggs then.
I thought that was implicit, but yes.
Me too. Me too.
it was great to
I was
see.
there, but I wasn't allowed in to the stadium.
Shocking. It was great to see the Carolina legends like Roy Williams and James Worthy and Robert Horry for the
How
Tide.
come they let Roy Williams in and not me?
His sweater is a lot nicer than yours, I assure you. It certainly didn't go the way that all of Tucson wanted it to go, but Clemson was the better team, and we'll get into it later. But it was a great experience, and I'm still glad I went, even though my boys didn't pull it out.
Rocco, maybe not coming from a t guy whose team lost there. Any other thoughts about just the whole West Regional environment? That and are you going to are you on your way to Phoenix as well?
Yeah, well, echo what John said. It was awesome to meet John in person and spend a little time with him each day. We were there 4 straight days of, whether it was interviews and press conferences or games, all the whole nine yards. It was really cool experience. I think I'm really glad I did the West because out of the four, it was by far probably the least, attractive for the national media with UConn and Purdue being other places. Dallas was a crazy mess. A lot of Marquette and Duke fans went down there. So especially after Arizona lost right away at four, kind of, I don't want to say cleared out, but it was kind of just like the nice white space out of the four regionals. And then to get the surprise Elite Eight game of Clemson versus Alabama and not seeing either of Carolina, Arizona, it really just put the focus on both of those two programs, which in basketball they pretty much never get. And I thought that was really neat. I also just like the fact, since Arizona was out, it was a lot easier to get to and from the arena, get around town. Nothing against Arizona, but they would have taken over if they made it to Saturday. And outside of that, I had never seen Clemson or Alabama in person before last week. Now I feel like I know everything about them. So that was a good experience.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, let me go ahead and pull up the screen share here. And if this works here, we will get the bracket. I'm even zoom in a little bit. I want to talk about each of the four regions. And let's start in the East actually before we go to that West region. Ooh, I went too far in the screen share there. There we go. Where, let me bring a couple other guys in here. Joby, let me start with you. We saw in the East region and the games in Boston, UConn just doing exactly what they seem to have been doing the last two tournaments and rolling up a couple of teams.
Yeah, and it was the notice the scores being 52. That's what
Three
that's what
of
kind
their
of
four opponents have scored 52 points so far in
I
this tournament. It's
know.
crazy.
And these, it's one thing against San Diego State, who isn't always a high scoring team, but Illinois put up points. I was in shock on that 30-0 run, just watching it going, oh my gosh, where's Terrence Shannon? Where is it? Where is it? And it just goes to show, in my opinion, yeah, right now, and hey, anybody can beat anybody, and we could see an upset for Alabama could score, so you never know, if they just can outscore UConn or whatever. But right now, how can you not look at UConn and say, wow, that's our favorite right now for the national title? They look so dominant. They are a complete team, and this is a big credit to Hurley, who put together a team that was not put together preseason, unlike and we'll get to him, Purdue, which was mostly a returning team. This is a new cast of characters. Wow. Hats off to UConn. They were dominant and deserve their spot in the Final Four.
Griggs, but for the 30-0 run, UConn would have lost this game, correct?
Right. I thought you had a really good point on Twitter, and that was just pointing out that if it wasn't for that lucky 30-0 run, I mean, if you just take that out, Illinois is right in this game.
They win 52-47.
Right. In the first half, you were kind of expecting, or I was, because of how strong both teams were offensively, a lot more scoring than what we saw. But I credited that as much, if not more, to good defense than anything else. And then in the second half, what I think happened is UConn's offense started to play really well, and Illinois did not. Now, I know I'm not out on a limb saying that there, but like what UConn is doing in this tournament, when you look at the margins of victory, I don't know the historical side. Has anyone in it? Does it go back to the Big East tournament? When was the last time UConn was sweating?
I actually looked at this. I looked at this today, and it was when they beat Villanova back in January. That was the last real. That was, I mean, they had a couple 5-point games in there, but other, they had the loss to Creighton, but that was even a blowout. That wasn't a close game. You're going back to January for the last time UConn had a close game, and Rocco, maybe that's the problem UConn may have going forward these last two
Yeah, I got
games
it up here. They did only win
is
by
it
seven
close
at
one.
Marquette. Yeah.
If it's a close one, it's been a long time since they played one of those.
I mean, they beat St. John's by five in the
By five,
semifinals,
yeah.
but that was a late rally by St. John's. It was a 12-point game with 10 minutes to go, even in that game. St. John's made it look a little closer late, made a nice spark. But I know, I feel like we had this exact same conversation going into the Final Four last year. They haven't had the close game yet. What are they going to do in crunch time? Well, last year they never dealt with it. I kind of felt foolish for saying that last year. So I'm not going to say it again this year. I'm just going to assume UConn pounds two more teams and that's it. We've got a repeat of 06, 07 Florida Gators.
Oh, so it's just Stalika, then. Well, why are we bothered with this tournament? This is just getting ugly.
Well, I mean, there's still going to be the first semifinal between Purdue and NC State. That's
Okay,
probably
so at
going to
least you
have a
get one
little
more
bit of
good game
suspense.
next season.
Yeah.
I like that answer. But no, I mean, you were right, though, Griggs, about defense and Tytel. I think they shut Terrence Shannon down to like 5 points or something after everything he'd been doing. I mean, the defense is what is has been amazing for this UConn team.
Everything is, but yes, I think it's fair to say that when Terrence Shannon comes in, averaging about 30 a game in March, and he shoots 2 for 12, scores 8 points, that's gonna get you a victory. I think that the whole Illinois team had a bad day though, 6 of 23 from behind the arc. UConn has to be the favorite right now, and I don't know if it's because they're. I mean, it's because of everything, but yes. The defense looks solid when you're averaging, when you're giving up 52 every single game. Of course it is.
Let's go down to the West region and let's start with our two guys who were there. Rocco, let me start with you and Tytel also. But Alabama, 89 points and 89 points of a pair of victories here, and this was just great set of three games all across the board, I thought.
Yeah, they were. That was the other reason I was glad we were there because I don't think we had any stinkers. All three games were very competitive, hard to tell who was going to win. Edge of your seat action throughout the week. But yeah, I think both of Alabama's wins, particularly in the North Carolina win, they came up with some really creative sets to take advantage of Paxson Wojcik being in the game for North Carolina, playing a larger amount of minutes based on a move Hubert Davis made. I'm very impressed with Nate Oates and his staff. They kept getting the ball to Grant Nelson at the top of the key and creating kind of inverted ball screens to get Grant Nelson one-on-one with Wojcik. And Grant Nelson's such an amazing ball handler at 6'10". For him to go for get the ball at the top of the key a couple times, he took him straight to the rack and got that one-on-one look they wanted with an overload on the other side of the floor. And then and a couple other times, he just pulled up from three and drained it. So it was like the Grant Nelson show left and right. He also did a great job when he got matched up with Bacot on a couple possessions. And Grant Nelson was the key to that big win, in my opinion. And then in the Clemson win, of course, Mark Sears just caught fire. I think he hit seven threes in a row without a miss at one stretch. That was really the difference in the game. And that was another creative job by the Alabama staff, Clemson had gone back and forth with a 3-2 zone that Brad Brunell uses from time to time throughout the year. They went to it twice. Bama burned them both times when they went to the 3-2. And Sears was him and Jaron Stevenson, who had a career-high 19. I tell you, your email was great. The 4 threes and 2 air balls. Those air balls were ugly, too. They were not even close. So it was just like Alabama to me. And maybe it's just I'm a little biased because I covered Oates at Buffalo as well. It like just an unbelievable coaching job, playing the chess match, adjusting to what they see in front of them, making calls on the fly. They didn't even have to call timeouts on a couple of these things that I picked up on. But man, I just felt like they really earned it with the way they out-schemed both teams.
Yeah, Tytel, what do you think? You were there as well.
Yeah, I Rocco covered it very well. I'll just chime in. In the Carolina game, Tar Heels up 10 points early on, and then Alabama fought all the way back due to Grant Nelson being the player of the game going against the great Armando Bacot. I got to interview Nelson's dad, Nels Nelson. Yes, that's his name, that morning, and the nicest guy. And I got to see him at the game last weekend, and just an amazing family. As far as the Clemson-Alabama game, Clemson up 13 points after 13 minutes. I thought, wow, like, I guess Alabama had a nice run, but then they just like flipped the switch and Mark Sears went scoreless almost the entire first half. And then second half, just insane. Made, I think, 6 of 7 threes, almost as much as the entire Clemson team who made 8. And Jaron Stevenson mixing in an air ball three with a corner three with an air ball three with a corner, like very inconsistent, but he made more than he missed in his defense. And I don't know if they can beat UConn. That's such a tall task. And I think I saw UConn's favored by double digits, which I guess is fair. But if you think that Alabama is only going to score 52 against UConn, I think you are in for a rude awakening because this team can score with anybody.
Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead.
Well, just a little bit of a shout out. Congrats to Alabama and Nate Oates. They're the first Final Four in the history of the school. And also Clemson. I mean, I know that they didn't get to the Final Four, but they got to what I think was just their second Elite Eight ever. So a historical year for a team that started out unsure if they were even going to keep Brad Brunell this year. Sometimes when you hang on to your coaches, good things happen. Again, and for Alabama, it's not over, but what an incredible season and tournament run for both these teams.
I will say, if Armando Bacot, who, when is he ever going to miss a two-handed dunk? He doesn't miss that two-handed dunk with a little over a minute to go that then is run back, and I think it was Nelson who nailed the three on the other end. It was either him or Griffin. Five-point swing. Carolina had it. I mean, if that dunk goes down, all Carolina has to do is have 80%+ free throw shooters make free throws. Yeah, you know, which I think that RJ Davis did miss a couple uncharacteristically, but I'm thinking Carolina. We're talking Carolina right now in the Final Four.
That's a big story from the Thursday session. Was RJ Davis 0-for-9 from three, just totally uncharacteristic. Every game this year, he had at least one made three. And then, of course, Caleb Love also 0-for-9. So those two guys, two of the biggest superstars in the West region, combined 0-for-18 from three that night at Crypto.com Arena. Just incredible.
It was. Let's jump over to the Midwest here. Stalika, let me bring you in. Just see if I can slide this over a little bit, get the whole Midwest region on the screen there. Where we saw Purdue – not much trouble with Gonzaga, but then Tennessee Creighton, first of all, and then the Purdue Tennessee game. Your thoughts on Purdue making their first Final Four since, what was it, 1980 or so?
Yeah, it was 1980, and this actually predated the Gene Cady era at Purdue, which is a little bit hard to believe. But at the same time, Tennessee was also playing for its first Final Four on the men's side. I think Bruce Pearl, I forget the year, he had also taken the Falls to an Elite Eight. So you had a bit of back and forth going on in that game until Edie, Lawyer, and crew finally were able to pull away.
Yeah, and Joby, that this Purdue team, I thought Edie was just dominant in these two games, more so than I think I've seen him his entire career before this tournament.
Yeah, and he was unstoppable in the middle. And, you know, the punctuating play was when Tennessee had a little bit of hope left with like 30 seconds down five, going down, see if he can cut to a single score with half a minute. He showed not just he can score 40 like he did in that game. He had a beautiful block. I mean, that was just like, just ate it up, game over, tipped it to a teammate on the block. It was just, he was overall both, offensively, defensively, and just as a leader, really showed his ability and his change from last year. You can see the work that he put in to get more mobile. It is Zachy. It's Zachy's game. But Connect was almost as equal on, from the Tennessee side. It was funny. You take away that score. So the final score is 72-66. You take away both of their scoring, and the score and the score would have been 32-28. You take away the two of their scoring.
I think I read this was the first time that there were two players that scored more than half of their team's points in the same game in the NCAA tournament ever. I mean, and it was a two-person show here. And I'll tell you, Rocco, one of the things that blows me away here is that they still think that Edie is not a pro prospect when he could be so dominant at this level.
It is kind of mind blowing, and I'm not the expert in that area. I can't claim I've watched any NBA games this year, but I do love the draft, so I'll dive in when it's the right time. But I'll just say also about Edie on the defensive end, what he forces other teams to do is why Tennessee had to keep running everything through Connect. I think they typically do anyway, but certainly over. I mean, they overloaded on Connect, and at the end, Purdue doubled him very effectively, and I think that was the difference in the game. It was tied when they really started making him pass the ball. But I think Edie makes the other teams shoot a lot of jump shots, and they're basically daring the opponents, hey, if you can make jump shots for 40 straight minutes, we'll give you the win. And almost every team that tries that fails, Tennessee being the latest victim. And that's just a really hard recipe because if you try to go in the paint, like you even saw Tennessee on several occasions get like an 8-footer, a 10-footer. They weren't getting blocked by any means, but it affects the guy's shot. He's trying to float it over Edie. He doesn't know if he's going to get blocked. He's not shooting his normal 8-foot, 10-foot shot. He's putting extra arc on it, or he's alligator arming it. And it affects everything that team does. So it's more than just Edie's offense. His defense is just as important.
And their opponent now is going to be Griggs, one of the most amazing stories we've ever seen. For a team that had no shot at making the NCAA tournament at all, heading even if they had made it to the ACC championship and lost there, win 5 games in 5 days in the ACC tournament, and now have won 4 games in a row in the NCAA tournament. NC State beats Marquette, and then beats the Duke team that had knocked out Houston, and here they are in the Final Four. How much do we even discuss NC State this season? Didn't we?
Not well, not much. It again, Purdue, a storied basketball program. Congrats to them. Their first Final Four in 45 years, I think. So
44.
44.
NC State since 83, when Jim Valvano won it all, first time back for them.
So unpacking NC State, I know I'm treading into Stalika's territory here. They were 45th on the seed list, and they were seeded below the first four. The only other team to reach the Final Four that I know of was that was seeded below the last team selected was Loyola Chicago the year they did it. They were actually 46th. I kind of wanted that to always be the greatest Final Four run ever because of my, soft spot for under the radar teams. I'm still going to claim that it is because they were one spot lower, but in the reality, it's not. This is a team that needed to win 5 games in the ACC tournament just to make the NCAA tournament. They did it, and now not only did they get in, they played their way into the Final Four. And no, there's never been anything like it. The comparisons are being made to 1983. The NC State team in 1983 was a six seed, and they were in the top 25 throughout the year. I'm not saying it wasn't incredible, but there have been two teams that I can think of off the top of my head. One was Nova in 85, and one was UConn, I want to say in 14, that were seeded lower than that also won it all. again, not taking away from 1983, but this is off the charts, over the moon,
Yeah. And now,
far less
David,
likely than that ever
I
was.
will say on that 83 team, because there were fewer at large bids, they
Yeah.
don't beat, ironically, this is the irony here, they don't beat Ralph Sampson and Virginia on the way there. That's getting him a very high quality win at the time. That Jim Valvano team likely does not get a bid. Likely.
Whoa, Joby,
Blame my team
there were
again.
52 teams in the
Joby,
tournament,
can we,
Blake.
by the way, mention that if Virginia can make a free throw,
Free throw from an 87% free throw
NC
shooter.
State loses the ACC semifinal, does not get that miracle three at the buzzer to force overtime, and the story isn't here. It's not.
Yeah, this was a team that lost 4 out of 5 to end the regular season, and that was
Four
losing
three.
to Louisville in their first conference tournament game at halftime.
I should also add the 1983 team that NC State had. They were also facing one school's all-time leading scorer, who was an 85% free throw shooter. He couldn't hit a free throw, and it mattered either against the Wolfpack. There's just some voodoo when it comes to playing the Wolfpack.
We now have Titel. We now have, for the sixth time we ever now, we have an 11 seed in the Final Four. Actually, there's been six of them. No one's ever made further than this. No one's
Yeah,
ever
but
made to the championship game.
there's been six, but only two have been seeded below the bubble. That
Yeah,
was, yeah.
right. I understand, but
Yeah.
Titel, this team with, I mean, and DJ Burns has captured the nation now. He's everyone's hero, is he not?
How could he not be? He's and the matchup with Edie is going to be fascinating because he's certainly not bigger than Edie because nobody's bigger than Edie. But weight-wise, he's actually like right on level. And I'm wondering if they will how they will defend Edie. Do they let Burns just try to keep him at bay one-on-one and just literally body him, pun intended, out of there? Or do they send a double team? Or do they like try to get Edie in foul trouble on the defensive end? I saw in the ACC tourney when they won 5 games in 5 days that they would just throw the ball down to Burns on the block, and whether he was going against Baycott or one of the other big men in the ACC, like he could make moves and he could like convert near the rim. He is tough on both ends of the floor. Again, I still think that Purdue is and should be the heavy favorite, but I'm wondering if that Edie Burns matchup is going to determine the outcome of the game.
And Rocco, is it going to be the Edie Burns matchup, or is it going to be who gets in foul trouble first between Edie and Burns that determines the game?
Yeah, it'll be a huge factor, of course. And Edie's so strong at not getting in foul trouble. He's an incredibly disciplined guy. So I'm not expecting Edie to get in foul trouble. But I'm also looking at guys like Mohamed Diarra is the third
God.
best. He's the third best defensive rebounder in the country. That's a huge key if they can get Purdue to go one and done on their trips down. And Diarra's 215, but you also have Ben Middlebrooks, who's the same height and 240. So between those three guys, you throw Burns in that trio. You can absorb at least a few fouls. Obviously, the Wolfpack prefer to have all three of them on the floor as much as possible. But I think there's some strategy within that. You'll need guys like O'Connell and Morsell, and of course T.J. Horn to really be able to make outside shots. Like I said, you have to make jump shots to beat Purdue. So I think that'll be the key. And of course, strategically, you got to keep Burns out of foul trouble because offensively, he's a load and unstoppable right now. Very much unstoppable. This is the best, and I think part of the problem maybe earlier this year was Burns was not as in good at, in as good a shape as he is now. He's still probably a little overweight, but he's not having a hard time managing the minutes load anymore. And that was a problem earlier this year. And he was also looking to pass a lot more earlier this year. Now he's just got his nose for the basket, and it's beautiful.
Well,
Well,
the Marquette
Joby,
team
isn't this a
showed,
team full of transfers also? Did none of these guys start at NC State? I mean,
Well, and
for the
Morsell,
most part.
learned his defense under Bennett. I mean, that was, as an example. The key with Burns, without a doubt, though, is, and Rocco nailed it a little bit, is he's in better shape, but don't let just the Duke game fool you. Remember what his stat line in the Marquette game is. He had what, six, I think, total, but he had like eight assists. I mean, and his
He's an
ability to
amazing
pass,
passer.
he will
He
be,
is.
can he be a threat to score with Edie? Oh, be able to block his shot a little easier than like Mitchell or someone on Duke's team. Can Edie control him one on one? If Edie can defensively, that's going to be a big thing for Purdue. If he can't and they have to give help, you're exactly right, Rocco. Then it's DJ Horn time. then it's O'Connell.
Yeah.
You know, and so
Horn's
it's going to be a
probably
going to
need to
watch
score 20. Yeah, I think Horn's going to have to go for 20 plus, just knowing that he's the guy that can do that.
But he
yeah.
can. And that's the that's kind of,
yeah,
know,
yeah. He definitely
he
can.
Might, if Burns is hitting it, if Burns is able to use those moves because he's quicker than Edie, he's going to be able to make that spin move. If right. if those if that becomes a great asset for NC State, then Horn will have looks to get that 20. He won't have, you know he's you're going to have to sag in, and that is unheard of for Purdue.
Well, but let's not forget about the rest of Purdue's roster. Let's not forget about Braden Smith and
yeah,
Lawyer
awesome.
And all these other guys. I mean, you know.
But the thing is, NC State, that's why you got to love about NC State in a lot of ways, is the rest of their team defensively, and DR, you mentioned DR, which is such a key. The rest of their team defensively can cover the perimeter. Morsell really is one of the best perimeter defenders out there. And Horn, et cetera, they all play very good. They held a very strong outside guard team with Roach and McClain and all these guys from Duke. They held them down. It wasn't that Duke was, well, Duke's off. They played a subpar game. No. NC State right. played defense and won that with defense and DJ Burns.
Yeah, Proctor was 0 for 9 in that game.
Yes, and he did have a few open shots he missed, but a lot of it right. was the defense that NC State deployed, especially on the perimeter. Morsell ate his lunch.
We have an interesting Stalica stat here now, though, with this game. We know that no team that has ever lost to a 16 seed has failed to win the national championship the following year. We also know that no team that has ever won 5 games in 5 days has ever failed to win a national championship. So what happens here? Do we have the immovable force hitting the irresistible object here, or what?
Well, we're assured of one of these stats, where one team is going to at least reach the national title game. Now, whether they're able to get a win against UConn is going to be another story.
And that kind of leads into what I want to run through each of you on, is what do you see happening in these two semifinals at the national championship game? And Sleek, along with you, what do you see happening here this next weekend?
Well, as much fun as it's been for, what is it, DJ Burns for NC State, he's going to be going up against the best big man the country has to offer. And now that, I guess, the weight of the world seems to be off of the Boilermakers for the most part, I could easily see Connecticut and Purdue making the title game right here, but I just think UConn just has too many options not to repeat at this point. I don't see a 1991 Duke versus UNLV matchup coming anytime soon.
You're seeing UConn over Purdue. Taita, what do you think?
I think that UConn and Purdue are making the title game just because they do seem head and shoulders above each of the Alabama NC State's competition. There's a chance that the ghost of Jim Valvano like pushes them to new heights. Like anything's on the table now for the Wolfpack. When you win 9 games in 20 days, you're like playing with forces beyond our understanding. And if Alabama makes 23s, anything's possible. But I'm going with UConn and Purdue in the title game. And if having to pick a winner, I think I'm going to pick Purdue, not because of the better team, but because I go back to Coach Hurley's post-game press conference in D.C. after destroying the Hoyas, although who hasn't? And he mentioned how the last two repeat champions, Florida in 07-08 and Duke in 91 and 92, featuring his brother Bobby, did so in large part because they had the core group. In the Florida case, it was Horford, Noah, et cetera. In the Duke case, Hurley, Leitner, Hill, et cetera. And I don't think that's a coincidence, which is why it's so rare. UConn does not have the core back. Sanogo left, Hawkins left, Jackson left. But they're still a great freaking team. But I just think it's not supposed to happen this way. So I'm going Boiler up.
Going Boiler up. Funny, we did a show 2 weeks ago where we picked the field here as a group. And we picked Purdue over UConn in the championship game. I actually entered that bracket over at ESPN. And it is by far the best bracket that I entered in over at ESPN. And it's in like this 73rd, you know, 73%, like the top 27% of the nation. So we did pretty good there if that continues going. But Joby, what do you think about what happens this weekend?
Well, you heard my analysis on NC State Purdue, and I do think Edie will be able to control, because of his height, the height is going to be key, will be able to control Burns one-on-one, which means I think Purdue is where you've got to go. On the other side, Yes, I'll go with UConn because you can't, it's tough to not to right now the way they're playing. But I will say this: this could be the matchup that is problematic for UConn because
I like that because I think Alabama is more dangerous for UConn than the other two teams on the other side of the
I
bracket.
agree. I like if it was North Carolina, let's take North Carolina. I would have no problem. UConn would take care of Carolina because it'd be a straight fight. And UConn's just better. But this isn't a straight fight. I mean, if Sears, you mentioned Sears getting hot, he's nailing him from the logo. UConn's not going to cover him out that far. I don't care how good your defense is. And with Griffin, if they're nailing threes, that's what you said. Oh, if they hit 20 threes, are you going to bet against that they could? I mean, this is a realistic number for Alabama. Alabama has to do that. They don't play great defense. UConn will score a lot of points. But Alabama has the potential to outscore them. I still pick UConn because the odds are that Alabama won't play a perfect offensive game or close to perfect offensive game. But the firepower is there to give Alabama a puncher's chance more than some really good team. Like I said, Carolina or Illinois or so, these are great teams, but they don't have that same uniqueness. So we get Connecticut, Purdue in the final. Well, I'm going to go with Purdue, just like I have from day one. And yes, the legacy of losing to a 16 goes forward, and Edie's the difference. You need something unique to beat UConn. Well, Zach Edey's that unique component, and Purdue is a complete team, more so than the team that lost last year to Fairleigh Dickens.
Rocco, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll start with the UConn-Alabama matchup. One key that hasn't been mentioned yet is Latrell Wrightsell didn't play at all in the Los Angeles games. He's pretty much cleared to go. He was concussed in the Grand Canyon game that, of course, was basically a UFC fight up in Spokane. So now you look at Wrightsell's shooting numbers. I think it's a pretty important factor for this particular matchup at 44%. One of the best three-point shooters, top 40 three-point shooter in the country, to go along with Sears at 43%, a top 60 shooter in the country, and then of course Ryland Griffin 39%. Alabama, to my knowledge, probably has never played a game before in an NFL stadium, so that of course is always tricky when you're trying to project shooting. But I do think they are going to have to make a heavy amount of threes, as John started the conversation with. The interesting thing is, the most amount of threes they made in any game this year was 19, and that was against guess who? Purdue, in a really close 92-86 loss up in Toronto, where they fired 46 attempts from three. And one of the interesting things about the way Nate Oates plays is if you don't shoot a three, you're shooting somewhere in the paint. He's not a mid-range guy at all. So they're completely comfortable playing this style. It sets up for a very fascinating matchup. We'll see how long Alabama can entertain us for. But of course, if they start cold, we could see a UConn demolition derby right out of the gates as well. And that's why I can't pick against UConn. And then under the next matchup, again, we've broken down NC State pretty well here. I do think the foul scenario, they've got a good game plan probably in place there. DJ Horn's going to need to hit a bunch of outside shots. And for Horn, how about this? A homecoming to Arizona State, right in the backyard, there in Glendale. But I think in the end, it's just too much jump shooting, and Purdue ends up prevailing. But I will take UConn to beat Purdue. I think it'll be a great matchup. Cam Spencer is an underrated, untalked about X factor that's been around college basketball forever. For those of us that have followed the Patriot League, he was probably one of the most efficient players in their history. He's carried that forward. He's like the fourth or fifth known guy on UConn's roster, but his efficiency metrics are through the roof. Those are the kinds of guys you need to play a 40-minute game in a kind of toe-to-toe matchup with Purdue. I think UConn repeats as national champions.
All right, Griggs, what do you think?
One of the things I want to mention before I get to this that we didn't touch that much on was the injury of Jamal Shedd in the Sweet 16. Houston had the worst luck with injuries in the latter part of the season, and I kind of hate that they sort of filtered off after having one of the better regular seasons probably in school history, and certainly an impressive resume. And as exciting as it is to see NC State here and the story that they're on, you kind of wanted to see Houston Purdue among the three. You wish all three heavyweights could have gotten there, only two did. Now moving on to the games tomorrow, it's just kind of an incredible story. Purdue, their first Final Four in 44 years. NC State, the run that they're on. Alabama in their first Final Four ever, and UConn in their first Final Four in 11 months, I think 11, 12 months. So and I think I don't know. The way UConn's been playing, I just can't pick against them. I do think that Alabama can be really hard to play against and really hard to defend for some of the reasons Rocco mentioned. I don't think they're going to get much in the paint. Purdue has been kind of shutting it down, or I'm sorry, like UConn's just been kind of shutting it down. I think they go on, and I think they go on to beat Purdue and repeat.
Well, I'll just throw this out there. My preseason pick to win it all this year was Purdue,
Yeah.
much like a few of us had.
I think mine was too.
That's why, and I think Alabama does give UConn a game. I think UConn does get that close game. I think UConn does find a way to win this before they lose to the Cinderella story of all Cinderella stories, as NC State wins the entire thing. I'm going to be the one that calls it because none of you will.
I
Why
like
not?
it.
It's, why not? I think that this Burns Edey matchup in the NC State Purdue game could be fascinating, and Burns may have the size to wreak enough havoc there that if guys like DJ Horn get hot, that's it. NC State wins that game, and then you almost have the same thing with Burns versus Clingan in a UConn game. So who knows? Let's call it just for the sake of calling it. I'm taking NC State to win this whole thing. Why not? It'll be one of the great stories of all time.
Yeah.
That
I think he
seems
just
like
wants to see Kevin Keats hit all of his contract incentives. Is that right?
that
I've picked them to lose virtually every round of this tournament. They haven't, so maybe they will.
You said the minute they went final over North Carolina, the ACC title game, you said they were done, Griggs. You said that's
Yeah, I
it. They had no
did. I just figured that that's all they needed. Like that was good enough. I
What's
think.
crazy is both Brownell, when you're talking, the ACC will not have the coaching turnover that many of us thought we would see this year, because both Brownell and Keats were on top five nationwide, hot stove list. Well, both of them proved their worth to their schools quite well.
Real quick
We'll
look at a
see.
couple other tournaments here. First of all, the NI oh, that's really, really small too. So please, I can blow it up a little bigger. The NIT is down to its Final Four, beginning Tuesday night. Indiana State, Utah, Senior Hall, Georgia. Griggs, do you care?
Yeah, I
Okay.
you know, I kind of have enjoyed Indiana State. I do think that they should have been in the NCAA tournament. Even if they win the NIT, I still think that getting
But
into
and
the,
would it at Hinkle, the home state,
yeah,
all that.
I still think it would. Would you rather win the NIT or lose in the round of 64? I think just about everyone would say they'd rather lose in the round of 64. But this was a good Indiana State team. It's an NCAA tournament caliber team, and they've been fun to watch in this tournament. So yeah, I care about this a little bit.
Quick shout out to Seattle.
Yeah.
Rocco, our CBI champions from up there in the state of
Yes.
Washington. Congrats to the Red Hawks.
Yeah.
And CIT championship went to Norfolk State.
How
How about
about
that?
that?
Two wins
Yeah,
at
that is
two wins at
awesome.
home. It's all you
Yeah, it
need.
is.
CIT championship. What else we got here? The women are down to the Final Four. As we record this right now, UConn and USC go seeing who gets to take on Caitlin Clark in Iowa in one semifinal, and South Carolina is taking on NC State, both in both Final Fours. And Tytel, we could have, if UConn wins this game tonight, for the first time ever, two schools with two teams in the f both Final Fours in the same year with NC State and UConn, which would be just amazing. Just to have one school do it is amazing
Yeah.
enough.
I love the history, but if you think I'm picking against South Carolina this year, you're crazy.
I think, and we just had the huge LSU Iowa game tonight. I think if we get that Iowa South Carolina, Caitlin Clark versus the undefeated South Carolina team, that could break whatever TV records are probably set tonight's game.
Well,
Yeah,
easily, yeah.
the women's Final Four is going to rate incredibly high this year, and I'm so happy for that sport. It doesn't it struggles with attendance and TV ratings, but not this year. It's growing in popularity,
Or in the case
largely
of the
because of
city of
Caitlin.
Portland, they also struggle with getting the court dimensions correct.
Yes! Oh my God.
It
That thing
mainly
was really shocking.
That is inexcusable.
Because literally, you can't even blame anybody really, because everybody touches the court during a regional. Like, whether you're a coach, a player, a media person, all it took was one person to notice it, and it took 4 days for somebody to notice it. And, like, everybody's responsible at that point.
Although it did set up the Iowa Hawkeyes mascot measuring the distances at during a break
I
today and
do
the
like
games at
that.
all, but he just
Yeah.
And
I
as
like
Gene
that.
Hackman once said, you'll find that dimensions are the same as our gym in Hickory.
On that note, let me run through each of you for any other final thoughts on anything that's going on in the world of college basketball or anything else you want to discuss. Joby, let me start with you.
Yeah, no, I'm glad we touched on the NIT because I am going to be paying attention. I am going to be watching because two of the better teams that I think that you could make very strong arguments for bids are Seton Hall and Indiana State if they are the ones who wind up in the final. And I believe that this is kind of it's a tribute because often the highly rated teams that barely miss out, they're the ones you pick against in the NIT because they usually go, well, we should have gotten the bid, and the sour grapes doesn't lead to production down the line. Indiana State had a bid in, right in their pocket, and the Southern Illinois loss, the Illinois State loss just killed them. Yeah, they were so
And
close.
five teams winning auto bids that would have not
Right.
made it.
And they would have been in, obviously, on that. And Seton Hall was that fourth. We found out because they were the first team out.
Yeah.
Seton Hall would have been the fourth Big East team if it weren't for NC State or New Mexico, et cetera. So the fact that they rebounded, have come back, and played so well, they have been the best two teams in this tournament. I expect them to meet off. It's going to be an enjoyable Thursday night for me.
Okay. Also Thursday night, Titel, don't know if you or Rock are going. You got the 3-point and the slam dunk championships at playing at Grand Canyon. Don't know if you're going or not, Titel, but let me go to you next on any final thoughts.
I have a busy week, Chad, so I wouldn't hold
Good.
your breath. But yes, I'd like to if I can, but no promises. Final thoughts, Los Angeles was great. It's thanks to the NCAA for giving me a press pass because they certainly don't have to, but I tried to take full advantage. Carolina, I got to like after their press conferences, I'm sitting in their locker room and Baycott just walks and sits down and I'm looking around. Everybody's busy with RJ Davis. And I got to just sit around and ask Armando Baycott several questions and nice guy. Arizona, I got to interview Palm Line captain Molly Hofer on the phone. She was great. Too bad her squad and my squad and the whole thing didn't stick around the longer the weekend, but that's okay. And the parents, I got to interview PJ Hall's parents, Jerome and Melanie, at their hotel in the lobby for an hour. The nicest people, great stuff. They shared photos of their family and stories, and just I feel bad Clemson didn't win for them. They're the nicest people. And then Nels Nelson, going back to Grant Nelson's dad, just an amazing guy. Grant growing up in Devils Lake, North Dakota, and he's got nine siblings, and they're all athletic. And the mom had to stay behind while Nels and his other kids went to LA. But now that they're here, the mom's flying in this week to get to see Grant in person, the Final Four. So it's as important as the on-court action is, and it is. For me, it's great to get to meet these other people associated with the programs behind the scenes. And I hope I get to do it again every March for the rest of my life.
And if you want to see all of John's great interviews with those people, go up there to the
Yeah.
website, scroll down, hit the back button. They're just look at the back of the
They're
last week or two
everywhere.
here. They're
Yeah.
all there. Stalika.
Well, we have a few more coaching changes that have been filled, at least as far as some notable under the radar teams. We finally saw Louisville make their move by hiring Charleston's Pat Kelsey as their
Definitely
head
under the
coach.
radar. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Charleston did not take long themselves. They went after Kelsey's old mentor, Chris Mack, who is now going to be coming out of quote unquote retirement, will now be moving to Charleston. And the other move that caught my eye, and this is one I like for James Madison, after Mark Byington took the Vanderbilt job, they hired Morehead State's Preston Spradlin. But if you've seen our Under the Radar podcast, you'll have seen how Morehead was a train wreck just about 5 or 6 years ago when Spradlin had to inherit the Sean Woods mess, and he turned them into a perennial OVC contender. And we'll have to see if he's able to continue his run at James Madison, who's been had one of their best seasons in recent memory.
Yeah, not a mess. Not a mess.
Rocco.
Yeah, Stolica was right on the same wavelength as I was. I was going to bring up some coaching carousel information as well. And to echo what Titel said, awesome experience at the regional. I also plan to do a regional round every year. Next year's probably a shoe-in for San Francisco since it's in the backyard. But it's such a cool experience. It's a great way to take in that second weekend of the term. And thanks to everybody involved. And, John, it was amazing getting to spend time with you. Look forward to seeing you this week again. As far as the carousel goes, Ben McCollum, start right there. Like Northwest Missouri State, he's been in the mix for jobs in the last three cycles. Finally takes the Drake job today. I think that's a great landing spot. Yeah, because they were rumoring Ben for Texas Tech last year, a little bit of Oklahoma State this year. He's also been rumored for lower major jobs. I feel like this is the nice sweet spot for him. You get an upper Missouri Valley job that's been built up. Drake's been very successful. Good opportunity for him. Great opportunity for Drake. And then I think all eyes are on USC now that the Andy Enfield to SMU news is official. USC, the main power job. Now, of course, going to the Big Ten next year. That's the one that I think could turn a lot of heads. If they go and pluck like an Eric Musselman or some other big name, that's going to re-spin the wheel even faster than it's already spinning. And of course, you know, Western Kentucky is now open after Steve Lutz officially has accepted the Oklahoma State job. So again, the carousel just keeps on ticking. I think, you know, for any school kind of being unlucky here, like a Western Kentucky, it really hurts because you've got five people on staff. If your coach stays, working the transfer portal, keeping things moving, building your roster for next year. It is a 1 year at a time sport these days. I feel like the schools that get stuck without a coach for a while during this period really suffer. So keep your eyes on that. Lots of news on the way.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably one of our off-season podcasts, we've got to address this issue with the transfer portal opening before the basketball, before the tournament, because it puts all these coaches, both ones with the carousel going on, and all these teams that are playing in these tournaments at such a disadvantage because the coaches don't have the time to sit there. Like, you know, Roy Williams is going to – not Roy Williams. Hubert Davis has time to meet with guys that that Danny Hurley does not have right now. You know, I mean, it's – but anyhow, Greg, you want to finish off the show?
Oh, go ahead, Rocco.
Well, yeah, just a quick caveat. They did just a year and a half ago expand the bench to three assistants to five. So you do have two full-time people working on it. So like Alabama, even though they're still playing, they've already signed two guys out of the portal. Illinois just, after Brad Underwood complained about it, they signed a guy today from Mercer, one of the best three-point shooters. So some of it is not as dramatic as they make it sound. But I do agree in general, if they can push the date back, it's good for everybody. I think the schools that really get killed are the ones that go through the carousel problems and lose their coach.
But we can only resolve a lot of the carousel issues during the tournament as well. So, anyhow. Great.
Right. They all go hand in hand, right?
Yeah. Only time will – I've got two quick ones. Only time will tell if – the period, like what we're in now, if it's going to continue to play out forever or if it will settle down into some sort of normalcy. But right now the sport has become so transfer heavy that a common question that every coach is asked during an interview is, who can you bring with you? So like, it feels like we're almost watching JUCO ball with the amount of roster turnover all across D1. I kind of wish it wasn't that way. I'm not going to say that like it's all bad, because I do think that players having the ability to transfer and not be in is part of the indentured servitude model that we had before is probably a good thing. But one of the things, it's like, can we have more stability than what we have? Is there a way to manufacture that or not? Probably not. My second thought was, as great as the NCAA tournament is, and as popular as it is, and is certainly as big as the Final Four is, I really am pleading with anyone that will listen to not expand it to 96 or even to 80. I because here's my argument. I think, and all of you know this, that from the first day that we start in November, it's great all the way through. And I think if you mess with it, it will not be great all the way through. I think you get a lot of games that aren't nearly as interesting in the early rounds of the tournament, and you have sort of a blah regular season. Different sport, but same idea. I think the expansion of the World Cup has ruined a lot of the interest in World Cup qualifying that before was really exciting and really intense. I love that one of the reasons Virginia got in was because on the fourth day of the season, they beat Florida away from home. I like that on the third and fourth day of the season, you're watching games that you know the committee is going to be evaluating. I don't want that to change.
Come on, Griggs. We need more. We need some sub-500 SEC teams in here.
We
And
do not. We do
quite
not.
frankly, the expansion of the World Cup, it didn't change my interest in soccer one bit. I didn't care before. I don't care now.
Yeah, well,
But
you didn't care before and you don't care now.
on
But
that note,
God, don't ruin this.
I do want to thank everyone for joining us. We'll be back again next week, I think on Tuesday night, to wrap up the entire season. But on behalf of John Tytel, David Griggs, Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, Joby Fortson and John Slica, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again one last time a week from tomorrow.